This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.
Hi, my name is Kgabo Legora and you're listening to Son of a Son, where I as a dad speak to other dads about how we can become better men. So today I'm joined by Craig Rodney. He is the legendary man behind the Instagram account South Africa, and he's also an amazing dad of two great boys. I hope you enjoy this one. Hello and hello again. Hello, my friends. Hello, good people. Today I'm joined by Craig Rodney. Man, I've always wanted to, you know, do the guests a good justice in my introductions. Craig is a big shot. He is the former MD or CEO of a massive digital agency in South Africa. He is the owner and founder of the Instagram account South Africa. He moved from Johannesburg to Cape Town to tackle the mountains. He's you know what, if I'm not speaking to him over some virtual thing, he's in the mountains with his boys. What's up, Craig?
Not too much, dude. Thanks for having me on the show. This is really cool, really exciting.
How are you doing, bro?
I'm very fit at the moment. Eh? Yes. You weren't lying. Jeez, I seem to spend most of my time running in the mountains.
Yes.
And but I guess that's why I came to Cape Town. So I need to make good on the reasons for making the move.
Yeah, I can imagine. What are the boys saying every time you're going to the trails?
Yeah, they join me quite often, so they're more than happy. Like, they've become like proper outside children. You know, when I was in Joburg, you'd say on a weekend, you're like, "Hey, what do you guys want to do?" And they're like, "Oh, we want to go to the shops." You're like, "Oh, geez, that's not great, right?" And since we've moved to Cape Town now it's like, "Oh, let's go hike in the mountains." They go ride their bikes in the mountains. We go swim in the rivers and the dams. Otherwise, we go to the beach. You know, hiking in the forest. It's quite a different life here. So we're definitely taking advantage of the move and loving every minute of it.
I can imagine, bro. I can imagine. And so, like, you know, I've always thought about Cape Town as it's a complete contrast to Johannesburg. Like, the pace of everything is a lot slower, a lot laxed than what it is this side. Has that been a huge change for the boys?
I feel like the pace is the same. What's different is it's far less aggressive down here. Mm. And I think that gets perceived as being far more chilled and a slower pace. Mm. But it's the general kind of hustle and bustle is far less aggressive. You know, people aren't as in a rush all the time, and they aren't as pushy and trying to cut you off in traffic. Mm. And et cetera, et cetera. So it's weird. I think you can maintain a fast pace in Cape Town and still be up there, but definitely less aggressive. It's way more kind of chill down here, which I guess, you know, comes with that whole beach vibe and that kind of thing. So, but you know, I miss Joburg. Okay? I'm not one of those people who left Joburg and then suddenly hates it. Mm. There's a lot of Joburg that I really do miss. But there's a lot in Cape Town that I love, that I'm taking advantage of. So I like to think that I now have two homes, and if I had to live in either city, I'd be happy. Mm.
So I mean, I keep saying the boys, and I haven't even introduced people to your two boys. How old are they now?
So Owen is 4, and Cooper just turned 7 last week. So nice. I've got stage 3 and grade 1.
You say stage 3.
Yes, yeah. So like whatever that is, it's like a pre-grade something or other. I mean, everything's changed. I'm so old, dude. Everything's changed since from when I was in school. Like we still had matric and standards, you know?
Yes. And how's that been? I mean, the question is that now you've been a dad for 7 years to two boys. How's that been?
Well, I mean, you can't remember life before it, right?
True.
It's it feels like a different life. You just can't imagine. You can't imagine existing without your children in your life, and but it has. It's been challenging. I don't think there's a single parent on the planet who doesn't get to say that having children is a challenge. Mm. It forces you to learn so much. It forces you to face all your demons. It forces you to grow as a human being in yourself, but at the same time, it's the greatest thing. Like I've got these two little guys who I don't know, maybe this is super egotistical, but it's nice having kids who adore you. You know, it's nice being loved. Mm. And it's nice being loved mostly unconditionally, you know? Mm. So it's quite a selfish thing, right? Like, you know, it's nice to be loved. It's nice to feel needed. It's nice to feel like you can provide. Mm. It's nice having these two little things looking at you like you're the greatest thing on the planet. You know, yeah. There's a lot in that. But I've absolutely loved being a dad. Eh? Like, I feel like I'm lucky. Like I was meant to be a dad. Mm. And that's cool. So I get to put a lot of energy into it. And, I actively try and be a good dad, if that makes sense. Like mm. I try and improve, I look for areas and things to practice and be better at and stuff. So, but yeah, like, listen, I mean, yeah.
I mean, bro, I mean, when you say that you actively, you know, work at being a great dad, I've seen that, you know, I've seen how you've, you know, in the few meetings that we've had where you've said that you restructure your day and time and meetings so that it works around the schedule of your kids, that, you know, you only take meetings until a certain time and then you're fetching the kids and it's your time with them. I think that kind of like really inspired me. To also like kind of like look at my diary and it's like how much of my time is, you know, work and how much of my time is set out for them as well. So I mean,
yeah, you need that balance, right? You know, you have to make money, you have to provide for them. And unfortunately, the way our world is structured is you have to give up time with them in order to afford to have them. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a weird one, right? But the nice thing is like, you know, you don't have to be around your kids all your time. It is very much a quality over quantity thing. Mm. And so, but I, you know, I'm a big believer in how you manage your diary is how you is determines whether you achieve what you want to achieve. Mm. So if being a good dad is your number one priority, that means dad time gets first right over your diary. Mm. So anything to do with my kids, anything that's important that I've decided, okay, this is critical dad responsibility or a dad opportunity or something that we all want to do, that goes into my diary first. That becomes like the immovable. Then my work comes second. So then work has to find space in between that. Then my training comes third. And then so like training will find time in between that. And then if there's anything left after that, then I can do other stuff, right? But it's kind of those three things get to dominate my diary in that order. Mm. And, you know, if you want to achieve something, if there's something else that you want to achieve in your life, just make sure that whatever that thing is, it has first right over your diary. And that's often like a nice structural tactic to make sure that you are focusing on what you're trying to achieve. Yeah, sorry, Karen.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, for me, I'm torn and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm 100% behind what you're saying. But at the same time, I'm torn at the thought that, you know, sometimes it's like circumstances sometimes dictate the flow of our schedules. And it's like, as much as I really would love to go to the park or take my kids for a walk or go watch a movie with them, it's like, you know, I need to make ends meet so that you can actually even afford to go to school. So I think, and I mean, you're touching on this thing of like work-life balance, and I know that it's still such a touchy thing in South Africa, in our society. So, and now that you're mentioning how like the ranking in your priorities of your kids, your work, and your training, I'm like, in the average South African's life, it's kind of like, I want to say my kids, then my work, but you know, for my kids to eat, I have to work. So the ranking, so the ranking usually like, you know, dips in between. What do you think about?
So I read something the other day that really resonated with me, and it was actually on a mommy blog, right? But obviously dads can learn a lot from moms, so it's worthwhile, right? Mm. And this mom said, she said, When you're juggling all of these responsibilities, she said, you know, it was, you are going to drop balls. Mm. That's just the way that things are, right? But she said, it's not about being absolute. It's not about recognizing like your family absolutely first over work or work absolutely first over family or anything like that. She said, you've got to recognize that within work, you have glass balls and you have plastic balls. And with your kids and your family, you have glass balls and your plastic balls. She said, you're going to drop balls at work and you're going to drop balls in your life and you're going to drop balls with your kids and with your family. Mm. She said, it's not about not dropping balls. It's about as being as careful as possible to not drop glass balls, to only drop the plastic ones. So if you forget to do dress up and make an outfit for your kid for dress up Fridays or whatever, it's a plastic ball. That kid will survive. Mm. Right? If it's the kid's school play or their graduation, it's an opportunity for them to shine and for you to be proud. That's a glass ball. You need to be there, right? Mm. And so what, by looking at it like that, I suddenly realized, like, oh wow, the only time there's a clash is when it's a glass ball at work and a glass ball at home. Mm. But a lot of the time, if it's a plastic ball at work that clashes with a glass ball at home, home wins. I'll drop the work one because it's plastic. It'll bounce. It won't break, right? And vice versa. If I've got a glass ball at work and it's a plastic ball at home, I'm going to say to my family, listen, sorry, guys. Like, you know, I can't make this soccer match. Mm. I've made every other one. I can't make this one because I need to go earn some money. Mm. Your kids, their disappointment will bounce. Like, they'll be fine. Mm. So the only time there's ever really a clash is when it's a glass ball at work and a glass ball at home. And then you have a difficult time. Then unfortunately you're going to have to make a tough decision. Mm. And you've got to realize what are the long-term impacts of dropping either one of those. You know, if the long-term impact from a work perspective is devastating, then you've got to do the work. Mm-hmm. If the long-term impact from a family perspective is devastating, then you've got to do the family thing. 100%. But I think when you look at it like that, I think you'll realize that there's far fewer glass ball versus glass ball clashes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it's glass versus plastic, and then it's an easy way of indicating, of giving you an idea of which way you should go.
She really painted it well. Hey, I that's brilliant. That's really, really brilliant. And I agree. It's not black and white. There's an in between there where it's like you have to play it by the ear. And also, you know what, Craig, you know, there's something that I've been thinking about, and I'm pivoting the conversation a bit here, is that, you know, we both have and it's kind of like related to what we're talking about as well, is that we both have like a background in the digital space, right? And for a while I've been struggling and thinking about, you know, the relationship and how of, you know, us as people, as humans, with the digital world, and how kind of like that translates with, you know, how we raise our kids with devices and technology and all these platforms that are coming up. So I've been curious about how you've been managing that in your world, because I know that, you know, devices and social media and the internet is it can either be your vice or your tool. So I've been thinking about, like, how's that been in your world with your boys?
So I see it. I think there's two aspects to it that you need to look at. There's your kids' device time. And then there's your device time.
Sure.
And they're potentially different sore points, right? As with most things in life, I will err somewhere towards the middle and just go, as long as it's balanced, everything. And I sound like my mother here, but, you know, anything in moderation is fine, right? And so I'm not super restrictive with screen time with my kids. What I've realized is that if I give my kids a choice between being on a screen or being with me while I'm present, they will never choose that screen. They will always choose me, right? So their screen time is directly related to my willingness to spend quality time with my children.
Damn.
And that's like a dagger to the heart, right? Yeah, it's kind of like a wave of responsibility rushes over you, right?
I wish you could see my
and
face.
So
that's amazing.
And so what I've done, and this is actually like super practical, is I've introduced this thing in our household called chill and skill. And it's a cool little rhyming sentence that my kids know off by heart. And what we do is from about 6 p.m., it's all devices off, but for me as well. Mm. And let me tell you, it's way harder for me to put down a device than it is for my children. Mm. And so I realized that we created this thing called chill and skill, and my kids get to decide whatever it is that they want to do. We've now got this like 2 to 8 p.m. is this chill time, right? Mm. And but they, whatever they choose, it's going to be a skill. And I'm very broad on it, but we'll do reading of books. We'll do puzzles. We'll do drawing. Like you've seen, like I do drawing with my kids. You
yeah,
know?
I've seen it.
And so we'll do, so we do a lot of drawing together. But whatever it is, like the TV goes from DSTV TV and it goes on to DSTV audio. We find a radio station, play some tunes in the background so it's not completely dead. Mm-hmm. But the, those 2 hours are their time. But those 2 hours of my life belong to them. Like if they want to do piggyback rides, hide and seek, puzzles, whatever it is, I try and make it as educational as possible. And I try to make it that I'm not completely exhausted through it. Mm-hmm. But my responsibility as a father is to arrive for that. Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean by the word arrive, like I have to arrive and I have to do whatever it takes, like a cup of coffee, whatever, but have a smile on my face and be prepared to interact with my kids for those 2 hours. Now you must remember within those 2 hours, I'm making dinner and we're going to have a bath. Like it's not 2 hours of puzzles. Mm. It's 2 hours where you have no devices and you exist together and you talk to each other and you listen to each other and you have fun and you do games and you do dinner together and you bath. That time is family time, right? What I've realized is that by creating that space, and I'm listen, like to be honest, like I'm not perfect with it. Like last night, Cooper, my 7 year old, was like, I think it was like 6:30 and I was still on my phone and he's like, Daddy, what are we doing for chill and skill? And I was like, oh, like I had no energy, but I put my phone down because it wasn't important and carried on. Now what I've realized is those 2 hours in a day buy me phenomenal amounts of leeway with my children. Mm. And even if you're not 100% perfect with those 2 hours, even if you get it right 3 or 4 nights a week, you're still buying massive, you're putting in massive credit into the bank that you can draw on later. Mm. You know, so I can say to my kids, guys, listen, I have to work now. I'm sorry, but I can't hang out with you. Mm-hmm. They are way more understanding when I palm them off onto Beatrice, the nanny. You know, if I say, hey, listen, guys, you're going to have to go for a walk with Beatrice. I need to work. Mm-hmm. Or if I say to them, guys, listen, I'm sorry, but I'm putting on Netflix and you need to sit quiet and watch TV, right? Mm-hmm. They're way more understanding now of if I have to prioritize work, because more often than not, I get it right that I prioritize them.
So I mean, like, and I'm glad that you're putting it that way. I'm even going back to your analogy about the lost ball, because that's that. This is that lost ball that, you know, you are fragile with. Those 2 hours with your boys represent that in your house. You know, as you're talking, I'm like, you know, of course, like you're putting it into the bank. I guess some people call it the love, you know, my love tank is full. And then it's like what the boys is like, no, man, you've given us that much affection and time and attention that if you want to, if you feel like, you know, I need to work, it's that rare occasion. You know, it's not the norm that every single time we need to spend time together, you have to go do something else. So I totally back that. I, at the moment, really suck at it. I'm being very honest. I think like
most of us do, but we all struggle with it.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I think, you know, what woke me up to this thing again was watching that Netflix docu, Social Dilemma.
And, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. And I mean, already I had this thing of, you know, like device time is very limited in the house. They know that they either choose that you're either going to watch, you're going to have your hour of television in the morning or in the evening. And we give them that choice. So it's kind of like we put the ball in your court. You know, we're not saying there's no device time at all. We're saying that you choose when you would like for this to be, right? But just know that once you've decided in the evening, you're going to have to decide what you're going to do with your time. But I feel you, like, I think on the work week, it's usually hard because, you know, on my side, the schedule is like it chops and changes each day. It's like 6 p.m. It's the time that I get back home, and I still need to respond to the emails I couldn't during the day because you're driving around. But, you know, I guess having that routine matters. You know, I guess they say sometimes that kids are creatures of habit. And I guess that having that, knowing that, yeah, you know what, whatever happens, chill and skill is still going to happen. I still have his attention at that time. I can bank on that. And it does matter. It does matter for them.
So now that you, you know, you said this thing around like getting to emails that you didn't get through the day because you were driving around. So if you permit me, I want to talk about something that I think I got right.
Sure.
And it's this principle. My skin always cringes when I hear people say, oh, I need to make time or I need to find time. And I'm like, shish, I would love to be able to walk into the garden and find some time, you know, or like create time as though like you're a witch and you're stirring your cauldron and you put a spell in and it creates more time. Like you can't create more time, right? And you can't find time. What you can do though is buy time. So every single hour of every single day is based on a financial construct, right? When you go do an hour's worth of work, you have a rate for that.
Before you even continue, principle.
Every hour that you're not working, every hour that you're not working, you're essentially forfeiting that same amount of money to not work.
Bro, you taught me this principle. To this to this day, and that's why I feel like when I drop the ball, I remember that our conversation about this, about buying time. We had that conversation a few months ago, so I'm still learning I'm still learning how to do it. But the execution part of me, it's like when a gig comes in and someone says, "Hey, we have an event coming up. Would you be able to do the coverage?" And I'm like, what time is it going to be? And then they're like 3 p.m. And I know that 3 p.m. is the time that I fetch my kids. And I'm like, there's an opportunity cost that I have to play at here, where it's like, if I do this, then I'm going to miss out on seeing my kids, right? Because they would have been in school for most of the day. And then I'm like, okay, so if I say yes to this gig, then I'm saying no to that those few hours with my kids. So I'm like, okay, I can't do this one, right? But I could probably find and figure out a way. Can I negotiate and say that, okay, I'm rather going to get in someone else to step in for me and I'll still get a commission off of the gig one way or another. So I guess it's like there's no black and white and there's always a way to buy time to either be with your kids or to run your business.
Yeah, but just remember, right? So in an example like that.
Yeah.
I always try and create a separation between time with my kids and quality time with my kids. So time doing school run for me is time with my kids. Like we sit in the car, we laugh, we cry, they scream at me, I scream at them, whatever's going on the day, right? You never really know. But time, like doing a school run is time with your kids. But it's not necessarily quality time.
True.
Right? And so your kids don't need you to do school run. They need quality time with you.
100%.
I think what a lot of parents don't often recognize is that they will go, oh, I've spent all day with my kids. And you're like, no, you haven't spent any quality time with them. You've just spent the day with them. So you've just survived and tried to manage them and keep them in the back. You've just sat in cars with them. And so the chill and skill thing for me is such high quality time that I asked one of the moms if they could fetch my kids from school because I was working on something. Now I could have made a plan, you know, like I could have gone like, oh, she's like, and it wasn't even a client that was pretty, but it was something that was critical for my day to be classified as a success. And so I messaged Simone and I was like, hey, Sim, like, I know you're picking up your kids today. She lives in the same estate. And I was like, are you picking up your kids? Would you mind picking up my boy? She was like, no, fine, no worries. Like, yeah, you know, then I get a message from her going, hey, the boys wanted to come to my house for a play date. So I'll drop them off later. I'm like, even better, amazing, you know, amazing. But then my kids only come home at like 3:30. I have to go straight onto a work call. So they're with Beatrice. But at 6 o'clock, or as I said, last night, 6:30, Cooper going, Dad, we need chill and skill. And I put my phone down. And yes, and then we had 2 hours of quality time. My kids had a great day yesterday. Right. And so again, it's, you know, if you have to work and you can't pick up your kids from school, then you know, pay money, then you get to buy that time, pay money for a service for someone to pick up your kids, and you go earn more money. As long as you can earn more money in that time than it's costing you to buy that time, it's fine. Your kids aren't going to hate you because you didn't fetch them from school that day, right? But again, it's this bank. As long as you're doing a good enough job, or as good a job as you can, to invest in high quality time with them when it's available, the other stuff becomes easy. But I still want to talk about you saying, like, doing email and stuff, right? When I talk about buying time, I'm doing things like, what if you Ubered everywhere instead of driving your car? Now, if you Uber everywhere on a busy workday, you're at least getting an hour in the back of an Uber to work, email, even if you want to sit on social media and do and look at people's pointless Instagram stories, like whatever it is, you could buy the time to spend on social and buy the time to do plow through emails and that kind of stuff just by sitting in the back of an Uber, and you work out what is the financial cost of that, and you go, cool, okay, fine. So there's an increase in my monthly cost because I'm now paying more for Uber. You can make up some of that by buying a cheaper car, right? You can also make up a lot of it by working a bit more. But essentially, given that we're not talking about working more, we're talking about being a better parent. Technically, if you had that 30 minutes in an Uber at the end of every day on the way home, when you walk in that door, you could turn your phone off. And so you technically you could buy that time, right? It's about going back to that diary thing. You have to imagine if you went in for surgery and you were going to go under anesthetic, right? You can't sit and do emails during a surgery, right? So no one can get hold of you like that. You have to turn your phone off. Like, you don't think twice about turning your phone off when you go in for a surgery because it's like such a critical thing. And I know that it's rare, but it's a critical thing. If you start recognizing that your time with your kids and with your family, and as I said, it might not be 2 hours, it might be an hour. But the moment you recognize that is absolutely critical. It becomes a lot easier to turn your phone off because you understand the critical nature of it. But spending time with your kids while you're sitting on your phone is not time with your kids. And it's also, you're probably failing at that job because you've got your kids hucking you, and you're failing at being a good parent because you've got work hucking you. You're kind of one foot in each.
So
much rather just commit to one and be brilliant at it.
So it's kind of like that quantity over quality thing. I think even when you're saying that, you know, like it really hit home when you said that there's a difference between spending time with your kids and having quality time with your kids. And I think that's that X factor. And I feel like, you know, I think even in COVID, it's kind of like you had all these parents that were all, for lack of a better word, stuck with our kids. You know, like 12 hours a day, they're all awake and for like, you know, like 3 to 5 months. And, you know, you can't even say that it's quality time because you kind of like surviving in survival mode of like, what the heck am I going to do? They had school. What do I do now? And. But I think when you're intentional about it, that's when that quality thing comes into the picture. And I think, like, even when you're talking about the buying time and sitting in an Uber, I remember when you told me about this example, I immediately hired an assistant. That was my saving grace at the time. I got an assistant that really just, you know, kind of like improved my productivity a lot more. I was a lot more present at home.
Because you probably buy 20 hours back in a month, 20 to 30 hours of your life back by having an assistant.
Bro, it was an amazing few months. And then COVID came, And I mean, having said all of this stuff, and I know that, you know, I feel like now you should go into coaching and parenthood coaching, you would make serious coin from that, bro. but I know that, you know, it hasn't been an easy ride. So like in your, I'm kind of like reaching a conclusion with this. I have two questions with you. One is that, you know, in your journey of being a dad, what has been the most challenging thing for you, especially knowing that you're raising two boys?
Oh, wow. So I've suffered from anxiety for more than 10 years now. And a lot of my anxiety and my tendency to have panics and stuff is actually related to this fear of death. I think I was only introduced properly to the concept of death very late in my life. You know, I never really went to funerals. I never had anyone close die to me and stuff like that. So I'd successfully avoided really thinking about it until I was like 30 years old. Mm. And then it all came at once. I have this, the thing about having children, the biggest challenge for me is managing my anxiety and my fears around losing one of them. And I find that if I feel like I'm in a negative space, my mind tends to wander into places that they shouldn't wander, right? You know, you start thinking about the shit, right? So like managing the anxiety around that fear is really tough. It does have an upside, and the upside is that the positive side of it is I go like, she's okay, like let me just love every moment. I want to suck as much out of every marrow as possible, like every hour that I have with my kids. I really do try and appreciate them. On a more day-to-day level, but linked to this, I genuinely, the hardest thing is recognizing that the past versions of your kids have passed. Mm-hmm. They're not there anymore. Mm. You know, like I look at, you know, Google Photos throws up like these lookbacks to a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, I miss him when he was like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely do struggle with that. On a practical level, nothing really bothers me about being a dad. Like nothing's really difficult. A lot of it's just physical effort as opposed to anything else. So that's about as good an answer as I can give, I guess.
I mean, like, I think that when you mentioned the anxiety about death, like, man, like, especially like the past few months where you hear all this crap about, like, you know, kids being abducted and you're like, what the
fuck?
Or like, you know, when that happened, one of my friends is like, yo, I'm gonna get a gun. I can't live with this reality and picture the one day when I'm driving. And sorry if I'm inciting any anxiety here, bro.
No. I'm way ahead of you on this.
I can't imagine, you know, driving and getting to the robot and someone decides that they're gonna snatch my kid, and I feel helpless. That's the most defeating thing ever. So, and I think when you say all of this, I'm just remembering like when I was catching wind of all of this stuff, you know, you'd sit there and you look at your kids, you're like, then you switch into this, oh, I just want to keep you here. Don't go anywhere. I want to savor every single moment that I have with you. So I feel you when you said that, man. And, you know, switching up is that, you know, between the two of us, we were both raising boys in South Africa, you know, at the height of still, you know, things not changing. Whether it's gender-based violence, whether it's racism, whatever other kind of like inequality that we still live in. For you, what would you say are your words to dads out there or to men out there, especially in our country?
So I guess the best piece of advice I can give is to dads is around what you just said, is to learn to be a bit more vulnerable and to be able to become comfortable acknowledging that a lot of the stuff we don't know, a lot of the stuff you're not going to know how to do, you're not going to know the answer to things, and to be able to ask and seek advice from other dads, right? How do you, you know, I don't know how to talk to my children about race issues, right? I know how my parents talked to me about it, and I think a lot of that helped, but the world's also now a different place, right? So I don't necessarily know how to do that. You know, I said, like, I have both, like my youngest who's 4 will come home and go, Daddy, like the one boy at school who has brown skin, you know, he did this. And I'm like, and then my heart flutters because I was like, oh, wait, you can't say that. And then I go, wait, like, no, you can say that because he does have brown skin. Like, my 4-year-old's not being racist, you know? But again, like I'm sitting there. So now what you got to do is you got to speak to people and go, hey guys, like, what is the right way to do this? Does anyone have any recommendations? What can I read that will help guide me in being a parent here? Mm. Right. We are not born with the solutions and the answers to these types of things.
True.
And I think that collectively we will stand a much better chance of being able to figure this stuff out and have these conversations with our kids if we can have them with each other. If you and I can have a frank, honest conversation about how do we talk to our children about race issues, right? How do we talk to them about inequality in South Africa, right? My 7-year-old will see someone begging on the side of the street and will say, Daddy, why is that guy poor? And then, you know, and he's asked me, he goes, Daddy, why are all the beggars black skin? And you're like, he can see it. He's 6 years old, and he is already identified a difference in skin color in the vast majority of beggars.
I'm like,
do I talk about apartheid to my son? Like, do I talk about how badly an entire section of our population were treated for hundreds of years? Like, at what depth do I go with him? You know, how do I have that conversation with him without him default feeling sorry for black people? Because that's also a crutch. That's also not, you know, I don't know. Right. But what I do know is that there are people that I can phone and ask and say, hey man, like, what are your thoughts on this? How do you handle this? What do you recommend? Right. I feel like as fathers, we have to learn to be more vulnerable with ourselves and with each other around what we don't yet know.
I love that, bro.
And be able to go, I'm out of my depth here and I need help.
And this is the thing, I guess, that, you know, sometimes our cultural society is a bit unforgiving with what is deemed to be ignorance. But it's not ignorance. And I love how you said that we need to understand and acknowledge that we don't have all the solutions. And we don't. I haven't been a parent to a black boy post-apartheid that still sees inequality. So how do I now navigate that conversation with my son to a 5-year-old and in a way that he can understand it? And he'll be able to understand it when he's growing up. So, I mean, and I got touched at the fact that, like you said, you know, your son was like, why all the beggars, you know, brown skin? And I'm like, with my son, like, that's all he sees is like people that look like me are begging, you know? And I'm like, the day will come when he asks me that question. It's like, why are all the people that are begging brown or whatever the case is? And he sometimes, just to your point as well, he refers to the white kids in his school and says the peach, their skin is peach. And the day that he said that, I was like, wait, what? Wait, are you seeing race? I'm like, whoa, wait, he's describing what he sees. You know, like how, what other way would he be able to see the difference between him and the other child? And it's not even from a character or abilities point of view. It's just appearance. So yeah, I love everything that you just said, bro. It just, you hit the nail on the head, and I can't even end it any other better way than that, bro.
Sure, and listen, there's probably an entire podcast series
100%
alone is talking about, is empowering fathers and or mothers on how to have conversations around these topics in South Africa.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to do it. I do my best.
Yes.
I try, you know, I try rely on rationality and logic as much as possible, but also sometimes that misses by a mile. You just don't know. And I also, you know, back in my cerebral days, it's funny, eh? Like I did a talk, and I did an about me talk once. You know, everyone at the company had to do one, and I realized I'd never actually done one. And so I did one, and I stood up, and at the time I had like a 1 and a 3-year-old, and one of my employees stood up and asked me a question. She said, "You know, you're clearly privileged, and you've acknowledged your privilege, and that's fine. How are you going to deal with the privilege that your children have, you know? And I thought about it and I said, I'm not. Like every parent on this planet wants their children to be privileged. Like, you know, like it's against our very nature to try and remove opportunity and safety and essentially all of those things within privilege from our children. But they do have to be far more aware of it than I was growing up. Because I thought everyone was like me. I thought everyone had the same opportunities. Only when I left school did I start to realize, like, oh, wow, like there's different worlds out there, right? But as I said, like I think this is such a huge topic, and I think people are quite nervous about how to how to raise it. I would listen to any amount of recordings that you did on this topic because I think it's fascinating and I think I have so much to learn.
Okay, bro, I'm taking that. I will run with it. I will get those recordings for you, bro.
Awesome. I will be your first and most avid listener.
Thanks, bro. Craig, bro, I really appreciate your time. This was amazing and I'll stay in touch. See you soon, bro. I am Khawu Legora and thank you for listening to Son of a Son.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.